If you've been hurt in a car accident or slip and fall, then call the law offices of Seltzer Mayberg at 855-5000-LAW or go to onecalllegal.com. Mention 5 Reasons Sports to get a free consultation. With 24/7 availability, they'll make sure you work directly with an attorney to get you the compensation that you deserve. Once again, 855-5000-LAW. That's Seltzer Mayberg. Let me introduce you to another sponsor, BestEver.com. That is BSTEVR.com. BestEver.com is a fantasy sports simulator that uses real-life data to simulate hypothetical situations. For example, ever wondered if Dan Marino could win a Super Bowl with a top 10 running game? We all have. You can do that with BestEver.com. Let's say the Dolphins are in the running for a big free agent. Just add him to the current team and simulate games to see how it can turn out. Just open a free account and start building your own story and have BestEver.com spit out game stories just for you. BestEver is not only fun to use, but has many uses beyond just curiosity. Go to BestEver.com. That's BSTEVR.com. This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a revolutionary new daily fantasy game whereby you pick 2, 3, or 4 players to go over or under their fantasy point projections, and if you're correct, you win. Pick 2 or more players from the same sport or league, or go cross leagues for your parlay. Use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, 5, and receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. But first, sign up at prizepicks.com to start winning today.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry. It's me, the English one, fronting it this week. We decided to fuck Alf off because we've been really bored of him presenting. So you've got me this week, might be Chris next week, and Alf will be back the week after because really we love him. And he's the undoubted king. But Chris and Alf have been on air for about 10 hours doing a free agency thing, which I couldn't do because, quite frankly, I couldn't be bothered. No, that's not true either. I was having dinner. Anyway, it's an earlier edition of 3 Yards Per Carry this week because these two idiots forgot to tell me that you've changed the daylight saving times. Anyway, an awful lot going on in Miami Dolphins land, as it were. Free agency started today. Really, it started 2 days ago, and probably it started about 2 weeks ago, when teams started to work out who was going where and where was going who. The Dolphins have made a number of signings we all know about. So let's kick off with Michael Paladi, the new punter. No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
Did you mean to do that?
Of course I did. Okay. Of course I did. Nothing comes for free here. Nothing.
You're a professional.
I'm a professional, mate. We're professionals. You're a professional. Alf's a professional. We all know what we're doing. Listen. How do you think the first 48 hours of free agency has gone for the Miami Dolphins? Obviously, the Patriots have come out and signed everybody. I do think it's quite funny that for as long as I can remember, everybody that wins free agency has been absolutely ruined by the media. And now all of a sudden, Bill Belichick's a genius because he's done exactly what every other team has been doing on the first few days of free agency.
Oh, boy.
Since time began. But I mean, aside from the Patriots, how do you feel like the Dolphins' first forays into this year's free agency have gone? Because there's a number of interesting players that have come in.
Yeah, well, I'll start it off. I thought it was really interesting, and I'll take it from there. From what we're talking about, New England. I woke up this morning and I had my coffee and I had a bagel, and I walked past the TV, and here are 4 analysts just, you know, slathering themselves in all things New England and how they've closed the gap on the Buffalo Bills. And I just walked away and I said, okay, they're doing this thing again. But how has it gone for the Dolphins? It's been uneventful. Like, there's no big splash, but some of these guys are really, really good players. Anything that, you know, I didn't find anything strange. Like, there's no clear-cut bad players here. Like, Coleman, I don't know if it makes sense because I don't know if he's a better player than Nick Needham, but Nick Needham is on notice, I would say. Adam Butler's a really, really nice player, helps the defensive line. Of course, they started it all off with a trade, so I was pretty happy about that one because I like Bernard McKinney. He's a hell of a player. But I guess if you want me to complain about something, I don't understand what this – it seems like they had a list of guys that were flashy 2 years ago that run really, really, really fast, and we're just going to – place calls to all of them, and whoever takes our money is coming aboard. So I guess if you want me to complain about something, Robert Foster. I don't get it. But everything else, yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, we're going to dig down into the receivers in the second show this week. Chris, just a sort of overall view of the opening 48 hours. How have you seen it go for the Dolphins?
I see it on hold. You know, they obviously did a lot of roster maintenance moves, and that's all that's been going on. I feel like I keep feeling like, and I said it on Twitter, I said it on, you know, some of the Five Reasons stuff. You know, I feel like they're trimming around the edges, right? They're trimming around the edges in free agency here, but we're still not really getting a clear picture of what they plan to do, not just to improve the team. And obviously the draft is going to be a huge part of that. So we know that, but also, I mean, they ditched Kyle Van Noy and they ditched Shaq Lawson in the Bernardrick McKinney trade. And we know that Bernardrick McKinney replaces Landon Roberts outright. Right. There's that aspect of it, but you know, there's still some pretty big holes there. There's still, you know, a lot to be done at the wide receiver position, which we'll talk about in another show. And it feels like I said on Twitter, I said that it feels like they're painting a portrait and they're starting at the edges and haven't gotten to the face yet. I mean, it really just feels like that a little bit on hold. And I recognize people are like, oh, you say they're doing nothing, but they'd sign all these guys. And it was like, yeah, a punter and a backup quarterback and a backup running back and a Seathan Carter, whatever he is. And then Robert Foster, who, you know, for all we know, might not make the roster.
Chris.
I know. I didn't know it. And so we have all these like little tiny moves and the punter, you know, I'm not even going to get into, you know, it just feels like we're not really, and I didn't want them to make a splash, and that's not what I'm saying. It's just like, there's still holes here, you know, big holes, center, you know, who's going to play center, who's going to be on the edge, a defensive end for Shaq Lawson, or, you know, edge rusher for Kyle Van Noy. I mean, we don't know the answers. Who's gonna improve their wide receiver unit? We don't know any of the answers to this yet, and I feel like that's kind of on purpose. Like, I feel like there's something. I don't know. It feels conspicuous. It feels like, yeah, it feels conspicuous is what it feels like.
There's a number of interesting conspiracy theories kicking around, aren't there? Especially with, you know, are the Dolphins low-keying everything because they're waiting to sign Deshaun Watson? Is the, you know, that there's an awful lot of, and it's understandable. You've got one and a half sort of all-pro superstar quarterbacks who could potentially be dealt. I mean, it would be unprecedented, but to see Watson and Wilson traded. Mm. So there are lots of questions, and we just don't know what's happening with Nick Caserio and Houston and Deshaun Watson. We, you know, John McClain came out today and said, you know, it was his belief that Watson would be traded, and nobody's more plugged in the NFL than John McClain is in Houston. So there are all these things kind of kicking about. And like we said, we still haven't really signed a receiver. The Robert Foster thing we'll get to in a second. We'll talk about that later in the week. I just want to quickly rattle through the guys that we have signed, because lots of people are sort of saying, and you know what happens on the first day of free agency or the first hour when the Dolphins don't sign anybody, everybody kind of, what's happening? Tell me how to think. Tell me how to think. How should I be feeling? So for the people that don't know, you know, who the Seathan Carters are and who the Robert Fosters are, let's just have a quick canter around the course. And the Dolphins kind of kicked it off with the aforementioned Seathan Carter, 6'3¼", 241 pounds, sort of fullback / H-back / tight end / special teams maven. And really, that last one is the interesting one, isn't it, Alf? Because special teams is something that Brian Flores has really, really focused on, whether that was Kamu Grugier-Hill, whether that was the Bengals guy that we got last year, who, you know, who's the backup safety, his name completely escapes me, but Clayton Fajedalem. You know, special teams has been really important. We have a very, very good special teams unit, and it feels like Seathan Carter is going to help that, aid that, and come in and really bolster that unit.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's a really interesting signing out of all of them, because you know, Chris was making fun of me on that other show that we were doing today, because I said that I was watching a bunch of special team snaps.
To be fair, I was making fun of you for a lot of things on that show.
It's very easy.
Yeah. But I was watching a bunch of special team snaps because I was trying to figure out, maybe this is their new special teams ace. And I found out, okay, he's not very good at special teams. Seathan Carter is. And the interesting thing about his NFL career is that coming out of Nebraska, he's a guy that figured hey, you know, this is a guy that can catch the ball a little bit. He can get downfield. He has some speed. He ran sub 4.7. He was undrafted, but sub 4.7 at 250 pounds as an inline tight end, that's not terrible. And every time he catches the ball in the NFL, he really looks like he knows what he's doing with it. The problem is nobody ever throws him the ball. Now, one thing I did notice, he's a much better blocker in line than he is in space. So I don't know if that says anything about the current group, but he's a guy that fits, and he's a roster player, I believe. I believe absolutely he's a roster player because he could kick down to play fullback, and he could play in line. Now, I don't think in space is something that you want to see him do because I personally saw maybe – I'm not going to sit here and say I saw 300 snaps, but I saw 40, 50 snaps. And I never saw him hit anybody in space. It was mostly double teaming people and walling people off in line. So I think that's a consideration.
You know,
Chris, a number of questions. Yeah, I was going to Go on.
I was just going to say about the Seathan thing and the tight end position and the fact that he's a good inline blocker. It's striking to me because I heard that Durham Smythe, let's just say it's very common for around this time of year for faxes to be going back and forth between all these teams giving information about players, and I think Durham Smythe is one of those players, and I think that he could get, you know, he could find himself on the block to San Francisco, something like that.
That was going to be my point, really. It was about, you know, all of a sudden you've got Shaheen, you've got Gesicki, you've got Smythe, now you've got Cephas coming in. Obviously, Kyle Pitts sort of is the sword of Damocles that hangs over the tight end room if you're a bottom of the roster guy. And the Dolphins have the third pick. It will be interesting to see where this shakes down. Sticking with special teams, I know we don't really talk about kickers and punters, but a quick word on Michael Pilardi, because Matt Hawke was a pretty decent citizen, pretty decent servant for the Dolphins across his four seasons. Just looking at the stats, I hadn't realised that Pilardi came into the... I knew he came into the league sort of 5 or 6 years ago, but he played at the Raiders, the Rams, the Toronto Argonauts, the Panthers, the Ravens, the Colts, the Browns, the Falcons, and then back to the Panthers for four seasons. But actually, his career punting average... it's 45.3. Matt Hawks is 44.7. So actually, Pilardi is coming off a torn ACL or a torn Achilles. A better punting average, yards per punt average, than Matt Hawk, who we've always sort of held in pretty high regard on this show, haven't we?
We have held him in high regard, Matt Hawk, and it was a little bit surprising that there's... You know, I think part of it is just we don't want to do the work to figure out who would replace who in the special teams unit. I know I don't. so I never even really think about it. And I just think, you know, the easiest thing, yeah, sure, Matt Hawk's a free agent. Yeah, you just get him back, you know. But they obviously are not thinking that way. There are guys that are paid quite a bit on the Dolphins to really evaluate all the punters, and they just think that he's a good left footer, and that's what he is. He's a left footer, so you know that could be interesting.
It's also interesting. Matt Hawk's two. What's the opposite of finest moment? I guess it's their lowest point in his career was two games in Buffalo, and Buffalo has now signed Matt Hawk.
Good luck punting in that weather.
We'll see how that works out.
What happened to the Bills? What's happened to the Bills punter actually? Because he was phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm wondering what happened there as well. But
I will find this out as we go through the podcast and come back. But I wanted just to talk. Actually, you know, this isn't a free agent signing, but the kind of the diamond in our rough, as it were, would be the trade for Bernardrick McKinney, who I know we all like. We all like coming out of Mississippi State. He was the 43rd overall pick. You know, he's big, he's physical, he's 6'4", he's 246 pounds when he was at the combine. He ran a 4.66. He's outstanding in coverage. He's just been a really good player. Pro bowler in 2018. Obviously, he had a shoulder injury last season, early October, I think, sort of the second week of October, but traded for Shaq Lawson and a sixth rounder. We got a seventh rounder and McKinney back. If he's healthy, he's a hell of a player, isn't he?
Absolutely. And I did a yard work on him, and it was also interesting last year that the game he left, he finished, which was against Minnesota, And I guess he just looked at the record. He saw 0-4 and he said, you know what? I have an issue in my shoulder. This is something I have to take care of. I'm going to take care of it now. And he did. But his play hasn't really wavered at all. It didn't waver at all last year either. He's a two-down player nowadays. Let's be real about this. I think you don't want him out there in pass coverage too often. But he had his moments then too. There's a play where the Ravens tried to isolate Mark Andrews, and God bless whoever was calling defensive plays and alignments for the Houston Texans, because they sure as hell got Mark Andrews one-on-one with Bernardrick McKinney, and Lamar Jackson threw a nine route his way, and Bernardrick McKinney defended it. He has his moments in pass coverage, but you don't want him there all the time. Against the run, he is absolutely stellar, and he diagnoses plays before they even happen. He starts moving as soon as he sees the actions. He's going to be a huge upgrade inside over Landon Roberts.
Chris, where do you think he fits in this scheme? Because, again, people are like, well, tell me what to think. Where's he going to play? What's he going to do? How does this affect Jerome Baker? Is he going to – because he's not Carl Van Noy. He's a different player. So how is the system – how is the system going to change? How are they going to fit him in? How will it work? What will fans who don't follow the game quite as intently, who just enjoy the game for what it is, what are they going to be seeing on a Sunday?
Well, first off, you have to keep in mind that even having missed, probably three games or something like that, Landon Roberts still notched 400 snaps last year. So everybody who thinks that this is, their linebacker positions are just basically Kyle Van Noy and Jerome Baker, that's not really true. There's a lot of snaps there for a Mike, and for especially a hammer like Landon Roberts was, and like Bernardrick McKinney will be. That's his role. That's what he's going to be. He's going to fill in for Landon Roberts as a middle linebacker and be sort of attacking the line of scrimmage hammer into the pile. And I think, Alfie mentioned that he's a two down guy at this point in his career.
Yeah.
I don't know that he's a two down guy in Miami. I think that yes, he's going to start off with the Landon Roberts position. But Landon Roberts obviously was not in some personnel packages. They throw in a nickel personnel package. Landon Roberts would be out of it, or out of most of them anyway. The Dolphins do have actually a wide array of personnel packages. It's not just nickel is nickel and base is base. It's so they have a lot of different personnel packages. And I think that he can earn – Bernardrick McKinney does have the opportunity to earn some other jobs and some other packages that perhaps were manned by Kyle Van Noy. And so I think that, you got to keep in mind that he's – as a lengthy guy, he's 6'4", and he's 257 pounds. And, he had a 40.5-inch vertical when he came out. He's pretty, pretty explosive guy. You might have him in pass rush. You might have him coming off the edge, or he's notched quite a few pressures in his career. He's got 13 sacks in his career. I think that he could take some of the jobs that Kyle Van Noy took. He is not Kyle Van Noy's explicit replacement. He is more Landon Roberts' explicit replacement, but I do think that he could earn some other jobs, and particularly when he's there on third down, it might be as a blitzer, as pass rusher.
Corey Bajorquez is the Bills punter who had that outstanding game last season. But actually,
how could we forget about him?
Well, we say that he averaged 50.5 yards per punt last season, which is, I think, the third highest single season punting average in NFL history. Just chucking that out there. Every day is a school day here on 3 yards per carry. Let's rattle through the other four guys.
It's also the number of people, NFL fans, that know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah, I was about to. There's a little. He actually does a little video on how you can find it. It's on YouTube if you're that bothered. But he's a great coffin corner punter. And actually, I was quite surprised the Dolphins weren't interested in him, actually. But we shall see how Monsieur Pallade bounces back from his injury. Four other guys. Let's quickly rattle through them before we get to our second show of the week, where because people want to know how to feel about wide receivers. So we'll also tell you how you should be feeling. And we'll also talk a little bit about the guys that have left and whether or not there's any impact with the Ted Karrases that are gone and Cam Grugier-Hill and Davon Godchow. And speaking of Godchow, Adam Butler, another guy that we all really like, a really under the radar, meat and potatoes, defensive tackle who can soak up the run. He's tough and he impacts the pocket. I mean, you know, part of defensive tackles who can get sacks and impact the passing game are very valuable in the modern NFL. Where do we stand on Adam Butler, who also played hurt last season through a pretty nasty shoulder injury? He's a good player, isn't he, Alf?
Yeah, I like him a lot. And Greg Bedard, who covers the New England Patriots, reached out to the 3 yards per carry account to let us know that he was a really good sub-pass rusher last year for the New England Patriots. And I guess he's going to fit in that rotation. He's going to get snaps. Now you wonder, you know, maybe does this portend that maybe one of them are gone? I don't know. I don't think so. I think that they're just going to go in a different direction. And you could see some of these guys playing a little bit wider. Wilkins last year did play head up on the tackle a couple of times. It was something that they like to do from time to time. So maybe that's something that could happen. I think this is more true to the scheme, more true to the system. He's 6'5", 300 pounds. He's lean, but he's powerful. So I think this is more in line with what they want for the position. I think he's going to get plenty of snaps. And I think they're going to go for the 2x1. They're going to use the 2x1 theory. They're going to try to replace Shaq Lawson in the aggregate. So Shaq Lawson snaps from last year. I think Adam Butler just took half of them. And they're probably looking for a guy that could win one-on-one from time to time, rushing wide, to take the rest of those snaps.
Chris, I've got a couple of questions in about Christian Wilkins. I had one question come in on Twitter, which I immediately poo-pooed and actually thought about it. And maybe there is something there. But also, you raised a very valid point in the WhatsApp chat. So the first point is whether or not Christian Wilkins could move out and take some of Shaq Lawson's snaps. And the second question to that is whether or not Christian Wilkins is, or the signing of Adam Butler might precipitate a Christian Wilkins as part of a Deshaun Watson trade. Where do we stand on both of those points?
Well, I'll take the second one first. Yeah, I think that it is conspicuous. And this is something that I've spoken about with Barry Jackson, who, you know, he's written about it and talked about. The defensive tackles on the team, if you look at how often they were used and in the sub packages and everything, I mean, it was less than a two-man position for the Dolphins in 2020. And so you look at, particularly after Godchow got hurt, it was Zach Sealer, Christian Wilkins, and Raekwon Davis. And nothing else. I mean, Benito Jones got like 47 snaps, right? I mean, so, and this was the fourth, right? So the Dolphins just somehow convinced Adam Butler to come in as a young player who is still, you know, trying to prove himself in this league, to come in and take a man's place who had 47 snaps last year. And don't say he's taking Godchow's place, because Godchow went and got hurt. Right. He got hurt at one point and then he was just off and it was the rotation for 10 games or whatever of Christian Wilkins and Raekwon Davis and Zach Sealer. And they were doing fine with that. Actually, they were a better defensive line after that injury because of that. So these are all very good players, particularly Wilkins and Davis. They're going to have high hopes for, obviously. Zach Sealer was far outplayed his pedigree, and I just wonder about that. He is taking as the fourth man in that rotation. That is Benito Jones's job, and he only got 47 snaps. So how did they convince Adam Butler to do this? That's where I would bring up, you know, well, maybe one of them's on the way out. Maybe, and it doesn't have to be Christian Wilkins. What if it's Zach Sealer? They got him to a very affordable contract. Maybe us on the podcast aren't the only ones that have noticed he's playing really well, you know? So I think that I would keep an eye on that. I think so. Now, could somebody else go out there and take Shaq Lawson's snaps. You would think that Christian Wilkins, given his experience in college, could possibly do that. He hasn't really done that with Miami much. You know, he's played a little bit of left end, a little bit of right end, but probably like 70 snaps. I don't know if Butler is going to do it. That's not his history. He's not really, you know, that he's not really that kind of guy. Interestingly, you know, I think that Zach Sealer, you can make an argument that that Zach Sealer is a little bit closer to doing that. He's got much more experience, even you know, as a right end or a left end and a four-man defensive line. So it could actually be Sealer that is getting the bump out to take Shaq Lawson's place. And maybe they're looking at this as a way to beef up the run defense. And I know some of us are driven crazy by the run defense at times. So that could be what you look for. If it's not like a trade situation where they're like, you know, we convinced them to come here because we're really probably got one of these guys on the trading block. Then I would guess that it's because Zach Sealer's going to do more work at end.
Yeah. Let's rattle through these final four guys then, and let's start with Jacoby Brissett, quarterback who Brian Flores knows very well, obviously, because he was with him at New England, went to Indianapolis as the sort of the guy who was going to take over Andrew Luck. Good luck with that. And sort of played okay, but sort of flattered to deceive a little bit. But he's a Miami guy. He's apparently a great kid. Yeah, he's going to come in and he's going to be young and he's going to add some, you know, as much as everybody loves Fitz, and they did both on and off the field. I think Brissett is maybe a steadier ship than Fitz. You kind of, you know, you might not get some of the A-plus moments that you got with him in a couple of games, especially that win against the Raiders, but you also might not get the E-minuses. He might be a sort of a C-plus to B-minus kind of guy rather than somebody who fluctuates. Alf, would you agree or you disagree on Jacoby Brissett?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And that's another New England connection right there, right? Like, that's a guy they felt comfortable with. Two thoughts came in my mind when they signed him. First, Dolphins might have the best backup quarterback in the NFL. The second thought was, since he's so good, I hope that Brian Flores is not thinking about doing that reliever stuff that he was doing last year with Fitz and Tua Tagovailoa. So I was thinking to myself, okay, this is a blessing, because you always want to have the better player. You don't want to put a lesser player just to baby the second-year quarterback. But it did come to mind, like, you know, maybe it's in Brian Flores' character if things are not working out in week 7, let's say. With Tua Tagovailoa at halftime, maybe you see a Jacoby Brissett in the second half to change as a change of pace. So I don't think we're out of the woods there yet as far as Brian Flores going to his reliever, like he likes to call it.
Chris?
Let's be fair, Simon. You brought up Jacoby Brissett's name quite a bit, I think, on one of our podcasts for the backup quarterback position. Now, I don't like to boast about it, Chris.
I don't like to boast.
Well, I'll do it for you.
Thank you.
But you're welcome. But I didn't think it would happen because I thought it'd be too expensive. Honestly, like, the thing that surprised me about this is, you know, when you saw the money come in, when you saw the number come in, it was so low. It was really, you know, it's really affordable for a backup. And I think this is where you see the rubber meet the road on what the players are experiencing this year with the budget cut. You know, this is it. He's got a 1-year deal that is clearly a backup steal. No, there is no promise of anything more than being a backup in this contract. And so I think that it was much more affordable than I imagine they were going to get Brian Hoyer at like close to this price, maybe a little bit under it. But, you know, I thought that they're and instead they were able to get Jacoby Brissett. And so that's a kudos to them. That's really good. I think two things about it. He's going to play. He regularly came in the field in short yardage situations for the Colts, you know, as a sort of a wildcat runner type. And he converted first downs. He converted touchdowns. So I think the Miami is probably thinking about the same thing. I think that if you look at the New England experience and the kind of offense that they actually ran with him at the helm, then you sort of think about what they've been trying to install with Tua in Miami with the, you know, sort of the RPO based offense. There's definitely a fit there. And it won't look like Tua because Tua is less of a runner, obviously. But I think that there's a little bit of a fit for Jacoby Brissett and what they're doing. So I think those are two of the things that they were also thinking about when they signed this particular guy.
Mm. We've got 9 minutes left on the Zoom call. We've got three players to get through. So I'm going to give you one name each, and then you can talk about the final guy both together before I sign off in the style of Jake Tapper. So, Chris, tell the audience what they need to know about Justin Coleman. And whilst you're doing that, Alf, you can do a little practice on Malcolm Brown, a guy that we all really like. But Justin Coleman, Chris, 4 years, $36 million. 2 years ago, the Lions signed him. From the Patriots, obviously played 3 years with Brian Flores in New England. What do the audience need to know, and why should they like or dislike Justin Coleman? And what does it mean for Nick Needham, who's had a pretty solid two seasons with the Dolphins?
Well, it's pressure on Nick Needham. And what you need to know about Justin Coleman is that he came into New England and you know, he was a corner, a good nickel corner back in college. I liked him a lot coming out of that draft. And then he came into New England and became, you know, a good nickel corner. He played for Seattle. He played for Detroit. And his history is as a slot, and that's where it's going to put pressure on Nick Needham. And he is a favorite of Josh Boyer's, is what I'm told anyway. And so, he comes in, and this is immediate pressure on Nick Needham. It shows that nobody can ever get comfortable. I mean, hell, you know, Zach Sealer, for as good as he get and as he is, just got Adam Butler breathing down his neck. So Nick Needham, as good as he's been as a, you know, undrafted free agent, now has a Justin Coleman breathing down his neck. And that's how you look at it. He's not going to play safety. I very much doubt that. He's not going to, you know, play, well, he'll play some outside corner, but Nick Needham is probably a little bit more diverse that way, being able to play outside. But they have no Igbinogene for that anyway. So I think, yeah, it just puts pressure on Nick Needham.
Alf, Malcolm Brown, running back.
Yeah, Malcolm Brown is a guy. Malcolm Brown is a guy that I really liked. If you remember last year when we did our preview of the Rams-Dolphins game, I said I really liked that running backs group that they have there in Los Angeles. And at the time, Cam Akers was hurt. So they drafted Cam Akers. They wanted to give him the job, and Malcolm Brown was essentially just a goal line back in L.A. But then he got injured, and then he started getting a share of the load. Ran for 400 yards, over 400 yards, 419 yards, 4.1 yards a carry, and he had 5 touchdowns. Now, when Cam Akers came back and really took a hold of that position, they had a choice. It could have been Malcolm Brown. It could have been C.J. Henderson. They went with Malcolm Brown, and I showed in one of the yard work series that I do on the Five Reasons Sports Network's YouTube page, Malcolm Brown was the catalyst on an entire drive to ice the wild card game against the Seahawks. Late in the game, they scored a touchdown to put it away. Malcolm Brown carried the ball 3 times and caught it once on that drive, as he was the back that they went to ice it late in the game. There was no C.J. Henderson. They trusted two guys. They trusted Cam Akers, who they have a lot invested in, and Malcolm Brown. Malcolm Brown's a guy who traditionally just runs mostly, at least that's what I've seen on film. He's just an inside and outside zone guy, but he runs with power. He's decisive. One cut, physical, runs angry. He's a guy who's going to be fun to watch. And I think, you know, you could do a hell of a lot worse at RB2 than Malcolm Brown, because I think the Rams had it right. They had a really good running back room last year. I guess they're just going to, you know, give a bigger load to Cam Akers, and their loss is our gain, I think.
He is a good player. He's a good running back. And, my role tonight is not to elucidate a great deal, but I think the Dolphins have made some really smart signings. Give us a quick précis on what we could expect from Robert Foster, who obviously played for one season with a certain Tua Tagovailoa at the University of Alabama.
Well, Robert Foster.
Any of you?
Alf, go ahead.
Okay, I got something on Robert Foster. 2 years ago, do you remember what he looked like 2 years ago? He looked like a world beater,
really,
right?
Good.
Yeah, but I don't understand why, and I don't know, I guess we got to do a little bit more digging, and I guess on future podcasts before training camp, I guess we'll have some information on this, but I don't know what happened to him in Buffalo. He was really, really good as a rookie, and then Buffalo decided, you know what, let's go get Cole Beasley, let's go get John Brown, and let's go bury this guy on the bench, and that's exactly what happened. So,
do you think he makes the team, Chris?
Oh, that's a tough one, actually, because there's going to be some competition at the bottom end of that wide receiver unit. I mean, we do right now, we're scheduled to have Albert Wilson come back. And, you know, right now, Jakeem Grant is still there. And right now, Allen Hurns is still is scheduled to come back. And so this is going to be a very competitive bottom of the wide receiver unit. Does he make the team? What I'll say is, He was a high recruit. Like, I know some people that are still like, you know, man, coming out of high school, I thought he was, you know, he's going to be great. And that's what you hear about. And then in the NFL, he basically has kind of mostly fizzled out. I mean, he had that year, and he has some big fans, like some people that I know that are like, just were all about him. And he's a big play guy, 20 yards a catch. He's a 4.4 speedster. He's always been known as the speedster, the deep guy. So as Alf said, I think you might have said earlier, you know, as something that he didn't quite understand, you know, the Dolphins might have been in on John Ross, as per, you know, one report that was out there. And apparently they could not get him, so they got Robert Foster instead. I'm wondering if they were in also on Damir Bird, but perhaps he, after the season he had in New England, he wanted a little bit more money. So who knows?
Yeah. He's not a big name, but he's a solid sort of low risk signing with some upside, with some potential, with some of the traits that we like. And we will get in to the crowded wide receiver position, the position that the bottom has fallen out of the wide receivers world, on the next episode of 3 Yards Per Carry. I was going to say next week, but it's later in the week. So as Alf says normally, that is all for now. What do you normally say, Alf?
I said, There is no more.
That's the line.
The great Jim Mandich used to say after every single show. I do it as a tribute.
Nice. I see. See, like I said, every day is a school day. There is no more. We shall see you later in the week.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.